This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. When protesters took to the streets in Michigan this spring in the names of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and countless other black men and women across the nation killed during police interactions, Detroit was right at the forefront. This was a city all too familiar with the issues at hand. This was a city that remembered the history of 1967, where officers seemed to have less interest in drawing the attention of federal officials. A city that was taking care of its protest business. And then came the night of August 23rd, when the largely peaceful protest ended with a confrontation on Woodward Avenue. Police ordered protesters to disperse. When the crowd stayed put, police beat them, used tear gas, and arrested more than 40 people. And the conversation has changed a lot since that night. Tristan Taylor is an organizer with Detroit Will Breathe, the advocates who've organized months of street action and who are now calling for the resignation of Chief James Craig. Tristan Taylor, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Could you describe what was different the night of August 23rd?
I think what was different the night of August 23rd, actually there were two things. And one of them was the character of the event itself. Which was a really festive event in a whole set of ways. We literally had a DJ playing music for us, like as we took up space on Woodward. And you contrast that with the response of the police to that is a really stark contrast. And what was different about August 22nd was, even though this was a festive and in a lot of ways the most relaxed event, that the police responded in the most brutal way against protesters that we've seen. More than four people ended up in the hospital with serious injuries. Countless others, you know, having injuries and wounds.
Chief Craig has sort of cast the police response as a matter of maintaining order. You know, he's invoked what happened in Seattle, where protesters were, sort of in an encampment that was police free for a long time, and saying that that wasn't going to happen here. And he's also said that he has no plans to resign. What do you make of his response?
His response shows the reason why he has to go, because he just seems to be detached from a reality and really tone deaf. In terms of both where the community is at and how it really isn't okay to visit protests against police brutality with police brutality. I just think that it just shows how determined he is to keep business as usual, which means a police department that acts with impunity, where he defends every police officer on the force, no matter what they do.
Was there any plan to establish some kind of encampment in Detroit?
No, like we didn't have a single tent. And I just want to note that even the characterization of like Seattle is a mischaracterization. There's a great citizen journalist, I think Amari Salisbury is his name, who like, you know, documented the encampment in Seattle. And how, like, most of the time it was like a festival, but it was an encampment. They had like tents, they had food, they had a whole big setup. Like, we had, you know, none of that. We just wanted to be able to take up space to highlight and to show our seriousness around the issues of the Duggan and Craig cooperating with federal agents from the Trump administration.
That's Mayor Mike Duggan of the city of Detroit that you're referring to. Would you say that Detroit Will Breathe's response to this and the demand that Chief Craig resign, is this more about what happened that night or what has happened since then?
It's a culmination, really. We've been asking, demanding Chief Craig's resignation ever since, I believe the date is June 10th, when police officers ran over protesters protesting in Southwest Detroit with their SUVs. And August 22nd was the last straw for a lot of community groups who weren't signed on previously to the demand that Chief Craig has to resign, but did. And we actually did a press conference where over 35 organizations signed on to the demand that Chief Craig resign. He's just oversaw the police department that acts with impunity. There was a lawsuit by a 70-year-old woman who was arrested last year by DPD, and they caused her to have a seizure because they had this 70-year-old woman, black woman, you know, down on the ground in handcuffs. And he just could, his police officers do no wrong. And that's a problem.
What have interactions with the police been like in some of the actions that have happened since August 23rd?
For the most part, there's been very little police interaction. One of those things is because of the temporary restraining order that we were able to get from a federal judge. The other is an expression of what I think is a deep support of the movement in Detroit, especially when we're marching in neighborhoods, the way that people respond to us. I think that DPD knows if they were to take action against the protesters that they would be exposing themselves to the community as being unnecessarily hostile to a group of people fighting for the interests of black and brown people throughout the city.
There was an announcement from a city attorney that there would be a countersuit to the federal lawsuit that Detroit Will Breathe and others had filed. Can you bring us up to speed on what else you might have heard about that?
The only thing that, the problem is this administration, the Doug administration, says a lot of things that never comes into existence, and one has to wonder if it's serious at all. We haven't heard anything serious about a counter lawsuit. They are trying to amend the temporary restraining order, though.
Right.
But the idea that the city of Detroit's response to a lawsuit around police misconduct and brutality of peaceful protesters is to file a lawsuit against peaceful protesters, really actually shows how rotten and out of touch this administration is, and how draconian the policies have been over the years in Detroit, to the extent that they would not only stay silent, but actively support police violence and brutality.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Tristan Taylor, an organizer with Detroit Will Breathe, the group that has been in the streets calling for justice for people of color in Detroit since this spring. Tristan Taylor, Detroit police have a somewhat unique history among American police department. They underwent years of federal oversight because of a legacy of violence and bigotry. And as a result, it arguably has a higher degree of integration. And it's often called a more functional department than some other cities have, one that's in greater accord with the community that it serves. But I wondered if that's your assessment as well, just comparatively speaking, whether the Detroit Police Department is farther along than some.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that from my experience, and I'm sure there are departments that are worse than Detroit Police Department, and that's really bad because Detroit Police Department is not great. Again, officers act with impunity. In fact, the Board of Police Commissioners, several commissioners have complained about officers with egregious complaints against them being promoted. There's been issues of the police interaction with community, including the fact that most of the time when you call in neighborhoods, regular neighborhoods, not the neighborhoods that are part of the strategic neighborhood planning in the city of Detroit of revitalized neighborhoods, the response time the police is terrible if they show up at all. And the interaction that they have, especially with young people, is just really an interaction of harassment. And so they have no deep community ties. And that is expressed by the way in which like, you know, regular Detroiters walk with fear whenever police kind of cross. Like, I know every time I see police, you know, I'm much more alert when they're around and on guard than when they're not. And that says something. That shouldn't be the response, right, of people who are here to protect and serve.
Your history of activism goes back to the days of the Occupy movement. And I think you were still in your teens at that point. Could you talk a little bit about what you learned during Occupy and maybe how it's informed, you know, the way that you think about goals or just what you're hoping to do with your time with Detroit Will Breathe right now?
Sure. So, you know, my experience with Occupy, I learned a lot, and it was something that I view as really impactful, but also from a critical standpoint. One of the things that I was involved with during Occupy was successfully doing an occupation of libraries in Detroit to keep the libraries open from closure. And we did home defense against people facing eviction. So it definitely proved to me the power, you know, of like collective action. I think the one downfall of the Occupy movement was the fact that it didn't have real clear demands and that it didn't see itself as having a dynamic perspective that meant really deeply engaging with issues of like working class Black and brown people in the city. It was able to do that, but not have that work be so much a central figure to it. You know, it tried definitely a lot of things, but I think the lesson to be learned is having demands is really important because it makes it clear what you're trying to do, and it helps you be consistent in doing that too.
The Occupy movement, as you know, was a very different kind of movement. It sprung out of Occupy Wall Street in New York, but in different cities around the country, it came to embody very different things. Like you say, here in Detroit, there were a lot of housing issues at play. They were the Occupy protests in Detroit were kind of notably uneventful comparatively. What would you say is different this time?
This is completely different. And part of it, what is interesting is in each iteration of the kind of social explosions that we're seeing, whether it be Ferguson or, you know, like the one around George Floyd, we see this growing interconnectedness with people across the country, but also around the world. And I think what's different between Occupy and this is, one, the character of the issues, that the issue of police brutality and the issue of racism is so central to this recent uprising in the way that it wasn't during Occupy, that it meant Black and brown communities were able to play a more central role in this struggle. And what's interesting about this recent iteration of like mass revolt is the way in which it has been able to pull huge sections of the population. So it's a really integrated movement, but that's challenging the most formidable issue in the United States, which is racism.
Mm-hmm. There are many who have noted that the character and composition of this movement is very different than Occupy and some other recent protests in a lot of ways. It could be said that some of the white people who got involved in the protests, you know, there was consternation among some activists and Black leaders because of the mode or the message that white activists had delivered. And that was true across the country as well as here in Michigan. But would you say that there has been some progress made in terms of allyship, or are you still sort of waiting to see the outcome of the movement?
No, I think there's been great progress. And again, the difference between Occupy, right, and this movement around police brutality is the way in which Black and brown voices have been able to play a central role, right? And the fact that there are large groups of people prepared to take the leadership of those Black and brown voices shows that there is a lot of progress and a lot of people who are seeing that what it means to be an ally, which I actually don't like the word. You know, one can say, you know, I need a co-conspirator. That's what I say. So, but having people who are prepared to come out and actually put their bodies on the line to show like their support against police brutality and systemic racism, I think is something that's like really important. And, you know, we got struggles to go. We live in a hyper segregated and stratified country, and especially in Michigan. So there's a lot of gaps that have to be bridged, a lot of experiences that have to be translated and learned. But I think we're doing a really good job of that, because the fact that this movement is still alive shows me that the power and the commitment and the depth of understanding that you need to survive 100 days is strong enough and clear enough that people are, you know, still coming out.
I've heard you quote Martin Luther King Jr. before, saying that, I'm going to paraphrase this probably poorly, saying that power isn't when someone says yes to you. It's when they want to say no, and yet they are compelled to say yes. How do you envision that kind of power right now? Is it the duration of the protests in the street, the numbers of people there, or some mix of those factors?
Yeah, it's a combination of those factors. And, you know, I'll just point out that there's so many things that this movement across the country has been able to achieve in the past 100 days is really like a big culture shift. We've seen, you know, substantive changes, not just around like policing. We've seen departments across the country actually be defunded. Like, we've seen more accountability. And I think that's because all of this energy, the movement has been able to make use of the energy, focusing it in various channels. And in Detroit, one of the things I think about is the Bill of Rights that was put forward by Councilwoman Sheffield and Lopez to enshrine in the city charter a set of like rights, not only around police accountability, but around water, making sure that neighborhoods are correctly funded, that there's a certain percentage that they have to be funded to make sure that, you know, we provide like stable living conditions for people in Detroit. The contract around facial recognition, or the DataWorks contract, city council didn't vote to get rid of that contract, but they also didn't vote to extend it either before they went to recess. And so that's an expression to me of the kind of power of the movement to really force officials to do something or stop them from doing something that they otherwise would have done.
Tristan Taylor is an organizer with Detroit Will Breathe. Tristan, thanks for talking to us, and stay safe out there.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.